Hello and welcome back to another episode of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told. I bring you into the backstage conversations that I have with other lead singers. This week, well, it's a special one. We've got a couple lead singers from a great band, and my friend Mike Howell is also going to come into this conversation because he is a huge fan of this band. Mike, are you there?
Hey, Shane, I'm here. Thanks for having me on this week.
Yeah, this is great. We do the new noise every week, but we don't, you know, go in together on a podcast interview. But this one came across my desk, a band I know you like a lot. You're very excited about their new album just came out. Would you like to introduce the band?
I mean, I would love to. I think this week is going to be amazing because we're talking to JT and Jesse from Era.
Yes. And a band that we've talked in great depth about on the New Noise and talked about their career being, you know, a little bit under the radar, but they just have a new self-titled record that came out only a couple, a month ago now?
Maybe not even that. I think it's only been 2 or 3 weeks at the time we're recording this.
Yeah, it's crazy. So it's a new record. It's turning some heads. And this is going to be really interesting to kind of see what their own take is on their own band, you know?
Exactly. You love to see it.
You love to see it. All right. Well, let's not waste any time. Let's bring them in right here. JT and Jesse from Era. Are you guys there?
Oh, I have to join with audio?
There you go.
Yeah, we got it.
Why?
I think it's just for corporate people that are doing sketchy stuff and they got to make sure that they're not, you know.
How do they know I'm not sketchy?
Yeah.
They're not saying like, I got to do this fucking meeting. My boss is such an asshole. Oh, shit. What? That's...
Hey, I'm in the corporate world. I have to deal with that all the time.
Exactly. Come on, man. Exactly. JT, this is Mike. He's my co-host. He's my co-host today.
He's the one that showered us in compliments.
Yeah, he likes you guys.
Oh, yeah.
He likes you guys. So
understatement.
We like the nice things he said about us.
Thank you. We've met a few times, too, just between sets and stuff like that. So,
God, your beard looks exquisite.
Thank you. So does yours.
I was combing before I got on here.
Oh, nice.
I am a distant third place on the beard front. Distant.
Shane, you have other redeeming qualities, though.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend. So we're having Jesse joining us too, right?
Yeah, he'll be in here momentarily.
Hello.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Jesse.
You figured it out faster than JT if you want a point.
What?
We are here, me and Mike Howell, with JT and Jesse of Era. How's it going, guys?
Good. Afternoon,
yeah,
for
yeah.
Most of us, I guess.
Yeah,
I think so. It's 2 o'clock here.
Yeah, it's hello. What's up?
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. Yeah, you say so. You're on the West Coast, JT. Is that right?
Central Time.
Oh, you're Central Time. Okay,
Central
you're
Time.
I am. I'm on the West Coast. Yeah.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it's like always been a confusing band because I know you guys are from Alabama. I know that's where you grew up, Jesse. I actually have no idea where you're from, JT. I just know that you used to be in a PA-based band.
Yeah.
So I assume maybe you were from there, but I don't really know.
Maryland, where most of my life.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a kind of a crazy story how you guys got together, I guess. I mean, I knew you from back in your days with Texas in July. I remember meeting you. I feel like it was at the Warped Tour we met.
Yeah, Warped Tour 2013.
Randomly, and you were like, oh yeah, I'm the new guy in the band, and then that seemed like it didn't last much longer, and then I ran into you opening for ABR and I was super confused. Yeah, I was like, what? You're like, I know that guy, but I couldn't put my, you know, it's always weird when you see people in places that they aren't supposed to be, and that happened with me. So
JT, 2013, that was the first tour you did with them.
Yeah, my trial was Warped Tour.
Dude, that's crazy.
That's insane.
The reason why that's so crazy to me is because I didn't realize that you had only been touring for that short amount of time before you got in our band. Like, you've been in our band longer than you were in Texas in July. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now I have, yeah. Actually, Shane paid me a really nice compliment. He said I sounded like the singer from Earth Crisis, which you said was one of your favorite bands, and I was like, I'll take that.
Did I say that?
You did.
That's cool. I don't really hear it anymore.
I never heard it, but you said it was one of your favorite bands. I was like, all right, I'll take that.
Yeah, maybe it was just the Warped Tour jitters on the first day or whatever. Yeah, too.
I mean, might have sounded way different that back then. Who knows?
It's true. Well, you sound great these days. Mm-hmm. Congrats to you guys on awesome new self-titled record. It's I've been spinning it a lot. I know Mike's been spinning it religiously.
It's been on at least two or three times a day for me. I absolutely love it, and I can't get enough of it. You guys put out an absolutely amazing record.
Thanks. Appreciate it, man.
So coming into this, this, you know, it's a self-titled record, which always kind of makes a statement, mm-hmm. sort of, if you mean for it to or not. What was the thinking behind that?
We did have a lot of ideas for album titles. I just kind of compile a list. Really over the course of many years, I just keep adding to this one note in my phone. So when I sent it to the guys, there was a lot to pick from, but I kind of, as an afterthought, I sent a second text just saying, or we could self-title it. And everyone just unanimously was like, yes. And
the naughty choice.
Yeah. Yeah. We just all felt just really good about it. It was definitely meant to be a choice. Like, okay, this is like kind of a fresh, it's obviously not the start, but it feels like, a fresh point in the band. So. Mm-hmm.
So did this come once you guys had written most of the album, or was it kind of before going into it, you decided that it was going to be a self-titled?
It was pretty late. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have had kind of a whirlwind of a career. I mean, starting out on Tragic Hero Records, moving to Cimmerian, which is a big step up, but now with UNFD and we're label mates, I know a lot about just the way that they operate, super above board. They'll kind of kill for you guys. And it does feel like there's a new resurgence of a band. Like, not to say this feels like your first album, because it doesn't exactly, but it does feel like this is the album that's going to put you on a new level.
Definitely.
I hope so.
Always the goal. Yeah.
Right.
We're all definitely happy that that seems to be, like, we seem to be getting that perception. Like, people are taking this one a bit more seriously, people that maybe didn't give us much of a chance in the past, but had maybe heard of us. Ultimately, I think that's probably more our fault than anything. We've always been good about, we're always on top of writing music, and we tour really hard, and we always have. But all the other little things around being in a band that matter, just our presentation, our presence on the internet, creating more content. Like, we've honestly just kind of like slacked in those regards, like, over the years. And I think this time around, being on Unify was part of it, just everyone in our team just kind of lighting a fire under our ass, and us kind of doing the same for ourselves, and just putting a lot of time into sort of the rebrand of the aesthetics, and also just a lot of cool marketing ideas, and having like weekly calls trying to figure out how to make sure this record got to people that didn't just know the band previously. And a lot of cool ideas came from it. Like, one of my favorite ideas we did for the rollout was our creative design guy, Jeff, came up with this, but like releasing tabs for a song before the song came out was like so fun to watch people try.
That was so cool. I tried to put it together and I couldn't come up with anything even close to sounding good. And I was just like, oh no, we're not even going to post this.
Somewhere pretty close.
Somewhere. Yeah, I saw you guys posted the videos.
Dude,
it was cool though.
There was a guy who he did like MIDI drums and stuff to it. Like, he just like did the whole part. So basically, Shane, in case you didn't see it, it was just like, we just posted a photo on Instagram and it was just said, Era Shadow Autonomous, and the photo just had a tab for one riff in the song. So it's just, that made it simple too, just to have like one little image we could post and we could put in our story. Right. But
did the tab have any rhythm at all, or was it just the numbers?
Just numbers, no tempo.
Yeah. That is interesting. That would be a kind of a weird songwriting
experiment.
Yeah. Songwriting exercise to find a tab somewhere and then just like see what you come up with. And maybe then you listen to the song after and be like, oh shit, well, mine's like maybe different enough that it could be original. Cause you know, notes are one thing, rhythms are a whole other beast. Right. So that's cool. I love that. I love it so much, but you're right. You know, when you talk about, you know, how much music has changed in terms of the promotion of it and what's important. And it's almost like, you know, what people see first, it's like an iceberg. People see all that image and all that, you know, stuff that's kind of bullshit or whatever. But the real important part is below the surface. Like that's where, you know, you really have the music and the what it's all about. And it's like, if you don't have that, it's kind of going to break apart, you know? And that's the thing is you guys have that base, you know, that below the water iceberg, you've always had that. And now it's just finally people are able to see that from a distance and be like, wait a second. Like, why was I not listening to this band before? Like, why were they not, you know, you guys got big tours and stuff, but why were you not headlining House of Blues? And why are you just getting to that level now?
You sound like us.
Which I always wondered what it was. And I guess maybe that's the reason.
Thank you. That's a good analogy too. Mm-hmm.
I won't speak for the whole band, but there haven't been many moments in our band where I've really thought of us as being that band, you know, like I've always felt like we belonged where we were, but when I thought about kind of being where, you know, we tour with August Burns Red a lot. And when I look at them and the crowds they draw and their production, I mean, I would say for most of the last 6 years we've been touring with them, I haven't had many moments where I've been like, that's where we're going to be, or that's where we're supposed to be. And this time, I'm starting to feel it. I'm starting to believe it, you know, like I really do like enjoy our new record. And it's,
well,
so I think that's a big difference. It's like, you know, if we can't really expect people to believe in us the way that, you know, like if we're not believing in ourselves, we can't expect other people to.
That's obviously a part of the tip of the iceberg too, right? Is your own self-confidence. And there are so many bands out there that like, they might not be any good, but they think they're good, you know, and they look good and whatever. And then that can fool people for a while. you guys get compared to August Burns Red a lot. And I, you know, and obviously you guys are heavy bands and both really great bands, but they're kind of a lot like you guys too, in the fact that they aren't always overly concerned about those little things either too, until maybe a little more recently.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I don't mean to like, I don't know, maybe I'm being too hard on ourselves, but that's usually my goal in the band. I mean, or I'm not, my, not my goal. It's like usually my place in the band. I'm the guy that's like really hard on us. but I do think we were for the longest time, just one of those bands. It's like, all right, first and foremost, write the music, play the songs while live. But yeah, all that other stuff, I've grown to like, kind of get excited about it. It's fun, you know what I mean? Like it's fun to figure out production. Like it's fun to figure out these marketing ideas. Like the band, we can never do it on our own, but it's nice that we kind of open ourselves up to help.
I mean, I've noticed it with all the marketing things that you guys and the effort that you've been putting through. Like when you did the mystery record variant that ended up being the Scorpion variant, that was something really cool with all of the like codes and things like that in order to find and unlock it. And I've just seen you guys everywhere, all over social media lately. And I think it's actually really helping you guys out.
Ads are working. All right.
Yes. Even the guy who listens to your record 3 times a day still sees the ads. It's, I don't mind.
It's funny to think about like the timeline or the steps a band can take to, like you can't predict like how your record's going to go or like what the result of your hard work's going to be. So you can make all the steps that you see your peers doing or other bands in the past. And there sometimes is like some sort of rubric, but there's no like really syllabus on how to get to that next level. It can happen. It can't. There's plenty of bands that we know have produced amazing records and now they don't exist.
You know,
kind of hard to tell.
You just want a chance, though, right? I mean, you gotta, you know, that's so much what happens is a lot of bands, they get the chance and they blow it. And usually, and usually they blow it because their music is no good. It doesn't hold the test. Doesn't stand the test of time. It's flash in the pan. It's trendy or whatever, or they just do something stupid. It seems to be one of those two things, but it seems like you guys have your heads on straight and your music is really good. So it's just like, okay, give them the fucking opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to happen. I think it's happening. It's just, it's so bittersweet because you put out this great record. Everyone's talking about it. And it's like, okay, what venues are you going to headline next? And it's like, well, I don't know. When is that going to happen? When are tour is touring going to resume? Like, you can't do it now, which must be very frustrating.
Yeah, Jesse talks about this all the time.
Yeah,
being
like,
able to play the shows.
Yeah, I won't say that I'm super frustrated about it often, because if I feel myself getting frustrated, I honestly feel bad, just because I just, like, I don't know, I kind of feel bad every time I complain about something, because it's, I don't have it bad. But yeah, it is weird, right? Because, like, we put the record out, and kind of the only way we can sort of see how people are feeling about it and receiving it is to look online, which is something that I traditionally have avoided doing, you know, reading comments and, you know, like watching reactions and stuff. Like I was pretty good the last couple of records training my brain to just kind of do that on release day and then back off. But it's like, I'll just forget about the record if I'm not doing that now. So I'm in this weird place where it's like, I don't really know how people are taking it or what the energy behind it is unless I'm looking online, because usually we can just go to the merch table or just stand on stage and look at people's faces and go, yeah, that guy likes it. This is going well.
Yeah,
but yeah, don't have that. That's been the weirdest part.
No, it's true. The reception live is so important, and you know, it gets so convoluted when you read things like YouTube comments or even Instagram comments, things like that are from your fans. Like, you know, we had this song put out a couple records ago. The song's called The Afterglow. And originally I was like, I don't know, maybe it's too poppy, you know, don't know. So we put it down a little bit in the track listing on the record, and it wasn't a single or anything. And the record came out, we weren't playing it live. And then finally, like, we're like, okay, we'll try it out live. And it was just like lightning in a bottle. Like, everyone's singing and dancing this song. And we didn't know, because the comments online were like, some people were like, oh, I really like this song, I really like it. Other people were like, oh, it's too poppy, you know, we like your old stuff better. But it was, when we played it live, it was undeniable. And we wouldn't have known if it wasn't for that. And yeah. I look at, you know, your record now, and so many, I mean, great songs on this thing. You know, and Mike and I talked about it a lot. And a lot of the best songs are not singles. A lot of the songs are down in the track order. It must be hard for you guys to know, like, you like them all, I'm sure, but which ones are really going to resonate with people? You can't figure that out right now.
It was interesting to see what songs were going to be the popular ones that weren't singles, and we were pleasantly surprised. We had an inkling for some of them, but some of them took me for surprise for sure.
I'm sure you knew songs like Gungrave were going to be big that wasn't a single, but did you guys expect things like Vanish Canvas and Memory Fiction to blow up as much as they have? Like, people love those songs.
I mean, those, I don't know about Jesse, but those two, kind of, I didn't expect the amount of love for Eidolon and Remnant and and Gungrave as much as I have, though.
I would say mostly it went kind of how I expected. Gungrave is, I mean, to be honest, it, like, for a metalcore band, it's like a pretty easy, easy win from the metalcore fans. You know, it's like, it's the most straight up metalcore song on the record probably. Mm-hmm. And we put it track two because we wanted it to be kind of the first thing people heard that wasn't a single. As far as like late track listing, The ones that I thought would be kind of hard pills for people to swallow were Electric Twilight and Lunar Halo. I don't know what this like mode is called, because I don't know a lot of theory, but it sounds like there's songs that are written to sound like aliens. You know what I mean? It sounds like space. And every time I write a song in that key, I just know, like, people are, I was talking to someone the other day about it. It's like cilantro. Like, people either just like love it, or they just taste like soap every time they hear it.
That's a good analogy.
But I love that key. I love that sound. So I like to ride in it. And we did two songs like that on this record, and I knew, I was like, some people are gonna hate these, but
extra
like
cilantro them. For Jesse every time. Yeah, I actually, it's funny you bring that up, because I made guacamole last night, and my girlfriend has the cilantro gene, so I have to make two guacamoles, one with cilantro and one without, because I think you need it. But hey,
I also think you need it. I think you need the weirdness. Lime juice.
That's right. Absolutely. Now, Mike, you had some questions, specific questions about some of the songs, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So kind of going off of Lunar Halo and Electric Twilight, and those, because we were just talking about those, they almost sound kind of like video game, kind of ethereal, like writing behind them. And I absolutely love that. And I was just kind of wondering where the inspiration for that was from.
I can't say anything particular like inspired the way they sound. That's interesting. I like that take. For Lunar Halo, when I hear it, I just like imagine that whole song. Like if I'm like imagining what a video would be, I just think about like a guy floating through space. Mm-hmm. But even that, like I wasn't trying to write that sound, you know? Like I just honestly, a lot of the songs just start with me noodling around, and then yeah. But so any like image or kind of theme that I found in that song kind of came after, but
gotcha.
But yeah, I think about floating through space. That was kind of,
that's the feeling I get when I listen to the song. So you did well.
Nice.
Well, you know, conceptually, lyrically, and all that, this record has a lot more going on too than some of your previous albums that were maybe a little more, I don't know, just kind of down one path. Like this kind of meanders a lot more. I found there was a lot more, maybe just a lot more subject matter. Where does that stem from? Does that stem from maturity? Does that stem from boredom? Or was there a fear there? I know you guys talked about how your old stuff was like dictionary core, you know, like super wordy, and now it's a little more simple. Have you guys maybe gotten away from trying to be too simple?
Yeah, so in our first two records, we had our original vocalist who had he actually had a very wide vocabulary. Like, we jokingly call it dictionary core, but I think he actually knew a lot of the words that he was using, which I feel like is probably rare in our genre. But I didn't know a lot of the words he was using. So once he left the band, I kind of took it as an opportunity.
We won't blame the Alabama State School Board for that.
Oh man!
Thanks. You should
far down that list.
I blame them sometimes. But yeah, before JT came in the band, we had an EP with the second vocalist, and I wrote all those lyrics, and I did try to simplify it, and that was also kind of me figuring out how to write lyrics. And then Drift, first record with JT, pretty straightforward. Like when you read it, it's pretty simple. Yeah. Like it's pretty general, you know, stuff. Like it works. Like it's mostly just kind of, it kind of goes with the backdrop of the music, which is very emotional sounding, and you can get out of it what you need to get out of it. But we're not really saying much on that record, if I'm being totally honest. And then Neon, that's the breakup record, right? You know, that was like first record I'm writing where it's like I'm in the throes of a breakup. So that one ended up turning out like pretty genuine. JT was kind of going through a similar thing. So it's kind of around Neon that I think we kind of realized how important it was to write good lyrics. And honestly, Bo, we tracked Neon with Bo Burchell from Seosin. And Bo was way more concerned about good lyrical choices than any other engineer we'd worked with. And he would definitely jump in when he heard a line that he thought was stupid. I mean, just straight up, like he'd be like, "You want to say that? Like, we're not saying that." So we had to like go really hard on like making the lyrics all cohesive. So this time around, we were kind of trained to do that, just from like Bo being so particular and just us already being particular as it was. It just kind of elevated that.
Well, there's an old cliche about metalcore. lyrics. I mean, yeah. It's like, all right, they're screaming. Who cares? Who cares what you're saying anyway, right? And I think there's so many producers and I mean, even even bands that are, they're way more worried about, I don't know, the fucking kick drum pattern aligning perfectly with the guitars at every single moment than they are worried about the fucking lyrics. And it's like, you know, okay, sure, the nerds are going to, you know, care about that or what mode this solo's in or whatever. But, you know, when you're talking about timeless music and what you're trying to be and what you're trying to say, I think that that's very important. So
I think it is definitely something that me and JT take really seriously at this point. We kind of set it up to where before we get to the studio, all the instrumentals are pretty much written out. You know, obviously little changes happen here and there throughout the process of recording, but for the most part, like, we go into the studio with a finished instrumental record. So all the, yeah, 90% of anything that we're having to write in the studio is just lyrics and melodies and patterns. So yeah, when we're not tracking, that is like our sole priority, which is nice. Mm-hmm. So this time around, there's a lot of free time to sort of get that dialed in. I love the lyrics on this record. Like, and of all the things that I feel like we're tough on ourselves about, that's definitely top of the list. I feel like it's the hardest thing to get comfortable with is like writing, mm-hmm. you know, like guys in, think about guys in metal bands, like, you know, usually writers, you know what I mean? They're like, we're just hanging out and watching Netflix and like going to coffee shops and playing guitar. And it's like, all right, now you have to write. And it you know what I mean? It's like, it took a few years to get it dialed in. I'll put it that way. Yeah. But now finally with this one, it's like, okay, I think we're figuring this out. Like, you know, just kind of zooming out and like being tough on ourselves, but just looking at it sort of objectively, it's like, okay, I think we're kind of figuring out, how to do this and actually say something and say it in a way that kind of like, you know, maybe inspires like new ideas and new interpretations, which is sweet.
Absolutely. Was there any apprehension of some of the different stuff you tried on this record? Was there a fear that some of your maybe core fans would be like, what the fuck is this? Or this isn't what Era is supposed to be? Because there is some, you know, you did take some chances here and there on this album.
Like the electronic voice in Lunar Halo, just that startled me, but in a really good way. Because that's something I never would have on my own thought of Era to do. But I'm really happy that it did happen.
Nice. Thank you.
I actually would think Jesse's probably might say the opposite. I mean, I felt like we were very excited to be as weird as we probably could.
Nice.
We've been working on kind of like what he said a minute ago. We've been working on like a routine or a lane or a method to what the Era Madness is. And Jesse and I definitely figured out a routine that works really well for the lyric, like writing and how to get through a song fast and cohesive. I would think over the last couple of records, he's found out some sort of like routine to get the best content out of himself. But the style, I feel like, is a combination of everything we've been trying to do over the past few records of me joining. Mm-hmm. Now that we've seen the dynamic kind of shift from what the old sound was to the stuff that I can offer to the band. And I mean, even it's hard to say what even the next set of content's going to sound like, but I think this is the first time we've like got through a record and be like, shit, we've kind of figured it out. Like, we've this feels like way different for us too.
I will say yeah, I think part of the reason why the record does feel fresh and does feel like a step up maybe from the last couple that we've done is because we kind of didn't think about what people would expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like I care what people think. Like, I when I go out in public and I'm ordering coffee, I'm just like, oh shit, I feel you know what I mean? It's like, I'm always thinking about people's perception and it's constantly affecting me. But, this time around, yeah, I just like just tried to avoid it. If I had thought too much about what people were thinking, I think a song like Memory Fiction wouldn't have happened for sure. That's a song I've been trying to make work for the last like three records, And I just never put a lot of time into it because I never felt like it had any place on an Era record. And this time around, I was like, no, I'm putting that on something.
I love it so much.
It's one of the best songs in the album.
To me, like when you come to that point in the album, you know, and it closes the chapter on the record, to me, it was like, okay, that's like, you know, all that stuff we talked about of you guys being that next level band and, mm-hmm. and like, okay, when are they headlining House of Blues? Like that to me was the exclamation mark on that point, because it just proved to me that you guys had, you know, there was more to it than just like, okay, here's another, you know, metalcore band, which you'll be labeled forever no matter what you do. Unless you like go full 100th or something, but you know, it's
I love that record, by the way.
Mike and I talk about 100th all the time, how much we like them more now than we used to like them. Not that they were bad before, but you know,
I feel the same.
Yeah, but that just being said, like, you know, it really was, I think, an important song for the album that maybe won't get talked about by, you know, press or maybe even not really by your fans all that often. But it's an important one, I think, in terms of, you know, your legacy.
Yeah. I feel like everyone in the band's kind of feeling this, but this record made me feel... It kind of did what it needed to do to make me not feel any kind of restraint whatsoever and kind of doing whatever we want on the next one, which hopefully we don't completely fuck it all up by like going too full on with that idea, because now I'm just like, I can do anything. And I'm just like, so hopefully we don't write, you know, like something that everyone hates because
we picked the wrong lane and we fell into the hole that we just talked about.
Yeah, the whole record just sounds like Memory Fiction. That probably wouldn't be a good move.
So you have a banjo player now, or what's next?
Apparently, we need a harp player.
Ooh,
yes, 100%.
Yeah,
I'd be here for it.
We put fake harp on our first two records, and ever since then, everyone's like, "Bring the harp back," and we're just like, "It wasn't really harp."
Oh, that's really good.
Oh, that'd be funny.
We'll put it in there for the meme in like two records later.
what you've got to do is you got to do it like Ailstorm, where they release the entire record again as the deluxe edition, but it's got something crazy where it's like four dogs or like symphonics. Yeah, they just replaced all the vocals with auto-tuned barks.
But like, oh my God.
You've got to do it, and you've got to do it like Era self-titled harp edition.
That reminds me of Run the Jewels, Meow the Jewels.
Yes, yeah. Exactly like that.
Okay.
So this is so this happened more than once.
You didn't know about that? Yeah. Run the Jewels had a whole release with all Cat references, and Snoop Dogg was on a song.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, but Memory Fiction, that song actually did surprise me though when it came out, because it was one of those songs where it's like, all right, this is a song for me.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's gonna hate it, whatever. And then we put it out, and dude, you never know what people are going to think. Like the most like metal guy who hated all the soft songs on the last record this time around might love Memory Fiction. Like people were talking about that song, and I was not expecting them to talk about it. I was expecting it to completely just like slide under the radar and not matter to a lot of people. But I was like, okay, like this is cool. So I think our fan base is pretty open-minded.
For sure. I think you guys managed to kind of perfect your old sound and start a new one in the same album, which doesn't happen a lot. You know, a lot of times bands go, okay, they finally like figured out what they're going to do, and then you have to wait for the next record to kind of like, you know, see where the story's going to go. Whereas here it was like, okay, not only did they craft, you know, maybe the perfect metalcore record, but also it's like, oh, there are elements in this that are really good, and the record is not boring, which for me, maybe it's just because I've heard a lot of metalcore, it's hard for me sometimes to get through a full album
100%.
And not have my mind drift away, and this record doesn't do that to me, so congrats on that.
I really think this record just brought together everything that was great about Drift and great about Neon and some other kind of intangible element that really evolved and brought you guys to the next level. And I'm just so happy with the record. Like,
thanks.
And I had a quick question, like, cause I know you guys have probably been doing a lot of interviews and stuff like that, or at least like getting asked a lot of questions, but like, What's the favorite part of your record or of the record that like you guys haven't been able to talk about yet? Because I know people are like, oh, this is what's going on with the single, everything like that. Is there something little that you guys did that you haven't gotten to talk about yet?
I just like rediscovering things that I forgot about that we did on songs, like little layers or like ambience or transitions or melodies. There's certain like vocal inflections that Jesse will have on certain songs that I'll like go back to listen just to hear. I was like, yeah, he did a good job there. Like Memory Fiction grew on me so fast. And so did Electric Twilight. Actually, I was waiting. I really liked Electric Twilight, but I was waiting for the rest of our fans to tell us that they may or may not have liked it. So now I feel better about liking that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, like it's because one of the cilantro songs, like that key, it just like people just can't handle it. Like, yeah. One thing we haven't talked much about that I think is a big part of the record and is like Grant McFarland, Carson Slovak mix engineered the record, but Grant does all the vocals and he has perfect pitch, and him coming out with harmonies is the most like extraordinary thing to witness. Like he's just
like instant.
It reminds me of that scene in like I think it's A Beautiful Mind where like Russell Crowe's just like you just see numbers above his head.
Yeah,
like, going to work, you see all these equations. Every chorus on the record has at least three different vocal parts happening. Sometimes we layer it with five different parts. And I think the harmonies like really, really bring out the choruses. And I love all the emphasis we put on layering ambient guitar and keyboards and stuff like that. And those guys are so good at mixing that you hear all of it. It was just so sick. And like JT, you mentioned listening for like certain inflections in our voices.
Yeah.
And, I think there's a lot of engineers in metal who are really good at making stuff slamming and hit hard, but I don't think there's a ton of metal engineers who are great at working with singing vocals. They probably don't have to that often.
Right.
So I'm really excited that I listened to this record and I can, those inflections and stuff aren't washed out by Melodyne or something. A lot of times guys will go and pitch correct it, and then like you'll remember getting a really like aggressive cool take with like a lot of dynamic and personality in the take, and then you hear it back after it's been pitch corrected and stuff, and it's like I can't hear all the good stuff in there. Yeah, but in this one I feel like it's all pretty well maintained, and I love the harmony volume. So yeah, I feel like there's a lot of life in the vocals on this one, which made a difference.
That's super interesting. So does he come up with the harmonies and then sing them to you, and then you have to sing them back? Like, is that ever a challenge? Because I always like hate when like, you know, you'll be comfortable usually with the main melody because you've practiced it or you've sang it over and over again or it's in your head, and then there'll be like, you know, a harmony where maybe a note gets skipped. Or it goes from like a higher one, and then all of a sudden it drops down to a low one,
right,
and then you have to sing it. I fucking hate doing that.
It's, brain breaker.
Yeah, I find it hard.
I think when I first like started getting like, you know, first started singing harmonies into a mic, and those things are kind of weird, especially like the first word starting a line. If there's like a quick like the, you know what I mean? Like if it's like the mouse is white, it's like if you just have to say the real quick, I feel like a very common thing with singers is to not really think about that first little baby syllable, but they're just thinking about, you know, the first like big note, you
sure.
know.
Yeah.
So over the years I've tried to train myself to not think too hard going into the, you know, when I'm about to start the take, like not think so hard about the big notes and think more about the little stuff in between. So I've kind of like trained myself to, I don't know, to get good at what you're saying, like to where, yeah, like usually wherever, like when Grant does hear that line and maybe it does go down and up, and maybe this note in the harmony is a third and then it just jumps to a fifth and then back down to a third, like I've gotten to where I kind of think about the song in the same way. To where I'll like sing harmonies to songs in my car, and I'll kind of do a lot of the same sort of movements and stuff. Like I've just like started thinking in that mode to where it's not as complicated when I get in the studio. Dude, that's the best thing I've done for learning how to write harmonies is just like whenever I listen in my car, I only sing harmonies now. Like I never sing the main. Mm-hmm. I just like try out like low thirds, high thirds, like fifth notes here and there. Like I just like play around with the octaves.
So
that's a really fun part of the process for me, actually. Is
so you're the Garfunkel. You're the Garfunkel in your car.
Yeah.
Yeah. The expendable one, I guess.
No.
Definitely not.
No.
So who's Paul? JC's Paul Simon.
No. The car. Your car stereo is Paul Simon, and you're the Garfunkel.
Okay.
Oh no. No, this is great. I find this really interesting, you know, the way you guys put mm-hmm. together this record, and congrats on it. What do you guys have going on now? Have you guys done any live streams, any kind of stuff like that, or any plans to?
No. We have an Alabama metal festival coming up in September.
Called
Furnace Fest, right?
We played Fest before. We played it.
You played it back then?
2003, yep.
God.
In fact, it's the only time we ever played Alabama ever. One time.
Wow.
To this day?
To this day.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know.
B-market? You didn't do like B-market tours?
We have, but we just never, for some reason, never Alabama. We did, you know, we did like Arkansas before and, you know, we do like Oklahoma and South Carolina, but we never Alabama. I don't know why.
Hmm.
It's crazy. But no, we played Furnace Fest and... This is like really early days. In fact, I have a pretty funny story about it. So it was the first time we ever went down to the South because our record had just come out like a month. Our first album just came out like a month before or something.
What cycle was that?
So this is when Broken is Easily Fixed. So the very first album.
Mm-hmm.
And so we drove down to Alabama in our van with, you know, no air conditioning, the heat permanently stuck on.
Oh my God.
So we end up there and we have all this merch. And I don't know if you guys have ever been to Furnace Fest or you know how it works, but it's under like a highway overpass or whatever.
Yeah,
so they put the merch underneath it. So it just starts pouring rain, like the hardest I've ever seen it rain maybe to this day. So everyone's like packing up their merch, whatever, you know, doing what they can. But we were like the last shrimp boat in Forrest Gump. Like for some reason where we were under the highway, like we were the only table not getting wet. So everyone's coming over, like buying all of our merch, like just to get a dry shirt. And we sold out of merch. And it was the only reason we were able to continue the tour.
Wow.
We had like no money. You know, we had no money and nothing. We thought we were going to be stuck in Alabama for a while till we could, you know, figure it out. And so that was our, when we played Furnace Fest. And I'm hoping to come down for that if I can come down, if the border's open by then. Because there's like, what a lineup. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Heck, we're very excited to play that.
So you got that? Anything else?
No, nothing that's announced, but some stuff. Yeah, we're definitely planning to get back on tour as soon as possible. As far as the live stream stuff, we probably should have already done it, but here we are and we still haven't. Maybe at this point,
still time technically.
How do you guys feel about it as far as like where we're at in the timeline of the pandemic? Because I mean, if we're looking at coming back,
I mean,
on tour this year, do you guys think like bands will still be doing that for the next few months, or should they?
Go ahead, Mike.
I think it's a good thing because I know that a lot of people, even with vaccine and everything like that, they're still nervous to go out and things like that. And I know some people are waiting to get like the second or third version of vaccine and things like that. I don't think it'd be a bad idea. Like I know people would appreciate it.
I think the other thing that doesn't
mild agoraphobia anyways.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that doesn't get talked about nearly enough, and I mean, you know, Jesse being from Alabama, you know, there's so many places in the world that people just can't get to a show. You know, like either they're too young, it's too far, they've got work, whatever. So I think that this live stream option is never gonna go away. I think bands are just gonna start saying, okay, last day of our tour, we're putting it, you know, we're putting it on for a live stream or whatever.
A good idea.
Because there's just so many people out there that, that can't, you know, can't get to it. So,
yeah, Shane, you just, I think I just realized you just kind of defined my, my insecurity about a live stream. I couldn't put my finger on like why, like I haven't, felt like buckling down and just like trying to get it done with everyone. Yeah, because you said, you know, bands will start just, you know, last day of tour or, you know, day after last day of tour, technically, like, film the live stream. When I think about it in that context, I'm, like, so ready. Like, I'm not worried about it at all. But when I think about just, like, not playing a show for a year and then us practicing and then playing one show and then it being filmed, it's just like, okay. like
that's a good point.
I'm gonna be so critical of every little mess up here and there, and it makes me nervous. So our music is like pretty tough to just nail 100%. And like when I think about our day one of tour compared to our day 30 of tour, just the night and day difference. It's like I think that really is where like my reservation has come from. Is
for
just
sure, man.
Like we're gonna have to all fly out and meet, and like I'm probably gonna have to spend 2 to 3 weeks in Alabama just getting super confident in the set that we're playing.
Yeah.
And it's so daunting. It freaks me out. I think I just shut it out of my brain.
No, man, 100%. I think that's a really good point and something that maybe people don't realize how difficult it can be. And the other thing too, is like when you go to see a band live or you're playing a show or whatever, you know, it's not recorded. It's not under this microscope. Like, it's loud and the kick drum's really loud and, like, everyone's just, you know, fucking drinking and moshing and, like, it's you're listening to it once. It's not like, oh, we got on demand and people are going to listen to this over and over and over again or watch it over and over again and then they're going to hear that note you missed. I mean, maybe they won't. You'll hear it, though.
They're going to rewind to make sure they knew they heard the
right. You know, it's so I get that. But at the same time, I think people also understand that, like, you know, it's live. And the other thing I always tell myself too, whenever I'm performing or whatever, I always think like, okay, like, this is my music. This is my voice. Like, I am the only person that can do this. Like, I can do it, right? Like, if I'm doing my best, that's enough. And that, like, that's enough. Should be enough for me, and it should be enough for everybody else. And that's it.
I actually do feel that way in a live context. I mean, the live streams also. I mean, you know, they are live. Like, for the most part, you watch them and then they go away. I think that's how most people have been doing it.
After like a day or two.
Yeah. So, that's an easier pill to swallow for sure. Cause in a live setting, like I am pretty good about not being so hard on myself these days. Like, even though I've been talking about how I am hard on myself, like that's just one of those things I've just like kind of learned to let go, because I think about it less in the context of people there to see us perfect it as much as, you know, people there to have a good time. And then I kind of put myself in those shoes where I'm just trying to have a good time. Like I at the end of 2018, I started like moving a lot, like on stage. Like, you know, usually it was like the typical, it's metalcore, you spread your legs, you kind of like go back and forth kind of thing. But now I just like I just go fucking nuts. I just like hit my strings as hard as I can. Do what?
We also put you on a pack recently too.
Yeah, I just
now you're the spin daddy.
It's funny that you say recently, because it's like it's kind of been a couple years, but
has it?
Yeah,
I remember when we were still cabled.
Yeah, well, I mean. Those things just break sometimes, and I'll just be like, fuck it, and just use like a cable for the rest of the tour and not even worry about fixing the wireless. But but I like to just go crazy, and like when you do that, you're gonna play, you know, less clean, and I just like don't worry, like having a good time. And I would try to like find that balance with the live stream, because I want it to be the same show I would do in a live context, which would be, you know, a lot of movement. But I also don't want every little string scrape and a little guitar hero noise to come through. So,
yeah.
As you can tell just from this conversation, I have been overthinking it.
Well, there you go. Well, you're realizing. And JT, you're doing a lot of stuff on Twitch these days?
Yeah. Been trying to do every Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Caught you making some dinner the other day.
Oh, my God. The cooking streams. Jesse, have you seen those yet?
They're pretty great.
I will never see that from anyone, no. I don't want to watch anyone cook.
It's for comedy. Like, I'm a terrible cook. That's kind of the point of it. Just watch me butcher these dishes.
Nice. I did not mean to put down what you're doing at all. I'm sorry.
I'm putting it down. Yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out, like, what the proper thing to do on your platform that you're dictating is the interesting part. Because when people get on there, like when I first got on there, I was like, oh, you have to be a gamer. That's why I watch it. But no, people are on there to hang out with you. They just want to like learn about you and form a community and make friends. And once I realized like that was what it was, my whole format changed and how I approached it changed. And that definitely helped a lot. Such an interesting animal. It's so different from anything else I've ever done in this world. Sometimes it's really weird and kind of uncomfortable, but it's fun most of the time.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
It feels like we're all, instead of being like with your buddies on stage and you have like a performance and you get off, it's just like, they're just watching you. All those little numbers and keyboard clickers, and like, what are they going to say? And who's going to pop in and be weird or rude or, I don't know, it can be kind of a crazy thing.
I find it's always weird when you're on by yourself and like you're just like, oh, hang on a second, and you're like, just do anything, like, just then there's just like this awkward silence, but you know there's like however many people are in the view count are just like there watching this. Like, it's a really weird thing, because when I do, you know, podcasts or whatever with other people, I'm always, you know, it's a conversation and there might be a minute of silence or whatever, but that when you're alone, like a weird monologue for hours and hours, it's strange. Yeah.
I couldn't imagine doing that. I mean, I know I just talk with you, Shane, but like even those like 5 minutes when like, hey, we're going to take a break and I come back before you or anything like that, and I'm just like kind of talking to chat. It's just like, this is really awkward.
It's like Garth when Wayne's not there.
Yeah, exactly.
trying to like carry it through like a couple hours if you like don't have anything planned, or you almost have to treat it like you're becoming like you know it's a show, so you have to like, the show must go on like regardless of what's happening or how awkward it is. There's almost like irony in the awkwardness because of what it is, but it's such a weird animal. And I see like other platformers, like the whole just chatting or just like the interactive persona is like, that's their professional thing. And for me, it's just like, why do you guys care? Like, why are you here? It's hard to be always interesting and always feel like you're offering good content. And like we say, we're so hard on ourselves. Like, God, I feel like that stream sucked. Like, I can't believe anybody is giving me any subscriptions or any time in my chat, but we're doing it.
I think they're great.
Dude, you got to believe in yourself, man. I'm sure it's great.
I love them. I think they're funny.
I just don't. What I think is cool.
You know what? I changed my mind. I'm going to come watch your cooking stream. You convinced me.
What I think is cool and funny may not, like, it's hard to gauge like what the right thing to do for your community is or your like channel. Like, that's what I'm still trying to figure out. Like what makes my like people come to my channel. And I don't know, I'm weird as hell. So I'm just going to keep staying weird and hopefully that works out. Cause I don't want to do it if I feel like it's a job.
Yeah. That's definitely the thing. Like, you've got to just kind of be yourself, I found. And like, if people don't like the kind of content you're putting out, like I post memes as well as like my music release list and like just whatever content. And like, some people just unsubscribe from my Instagram and stuff like that. And I'm like, so yeah, I guess I don't care. Yeah. But like, people that stick around, they stick around and they have fun.
I think like if I got into it, I think the only way I wouldn't get super in my head about it is I would just have to do it exactly how I wanted to. Because I used to think about it in the same context, like just being a video game platform. And I don't, I like video games, but I'm pretty casual and I don't play multiplayer. So that wouldn't work for me. And I don't know. I almost feel like I'd have to be kind of guarded with myself, you know what I mean? To not feel like I was selling myself a little bit, you know what I mean? I think that's something that I can imagine grappling with, is just like making sure that I'm not doing things and saying things, like trying to affect fun when it's not really where I'm at. And that could mean that I'd possibly be terrible at it. Or maybe it would be great because I would just not compromise doing what I wanted and being myself and talking about what I wanted to talk about. But I don't really know, because I've never tried it. And this is why I've been kind of hesitant to try it, because I don't want to feel like, you know what I mean? Like the dance monkey dance feeling. I'm not saying that's how it would be, but that's my fear. I don't think it has to be, JT. If that's not what you want it to be, then do something else. And if people drop off, then they drop off.
I would love to figure out how to not feel like that, but that's...
Don't look at the chat. That's how to do it.
Right.
Especially if he'd be coming in the chat like, do that one scream.
Oof. Don't do it. If you don't want to do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't.
Good.
Jesse, you have...
I'm glad that's a start.
You have your other project, Ghost Atlas. Anything going on with that at all?
No, I mean, yes, yes record, and no. Dude.
I want another record too.
Well, I've been trying to write one. I mean, I basically have one. It's just, I think like so much time has passed since I've released content for that band that now I feel so much pressure, like with this record, because I'm just like, well, this much time has passed since content, then the band's basically been inactive for this amount of time, so whatever is next needs to be very sick. And I'm just hitting this wall, because that's not really a good way to go into a record, is to say this has to be the best shit you've ever made. Like, best way to go into it is just to write the damn song. So I'm currently trying to snap myself out of that, but but because of how crazy my approach to it has been, I feel like whenever it is fully assembled, it'll be sweet, because it has to be. But yeah, I'm in a crazy writer's block with it, but it's like done. I have a record basically, but I'm just like, it's not good enough.
Just need to put the finishing touches on it, polish it, you know.
Drop a couple singles from it, some songs you like, and then see how people say, and everyone will like it, and drop a couple more, and then you just end up putting the record out in the end. It'll be fine. And then by that point, you'll have more stuff. Just do it.
Have you considered trying to go with Grant and Carson for this one? I mean, if that went so well, I don't know if you had an engineer in mind.
No, for Ghost House, I've always worked with Joseph McQueen and Josh Gilbert, and that's the move. There's a certain chemistry there with that band that is very important to maintain.
Well, that's awesome. Well, guys, thanks so much for doing this, and congrats on the new record. The self-titled era record is out right now. Everybody go check it out, go listen to it, go buy it, do the whole thing. Anything else to tell the people before I let you guys go?
Thank you. I mean, we're really proud of that record, and we're really excited to see where if the things you said about us will become come to fruition, because we'd be very happy to play venues like that. But yeah, we're just excited to go back to normal and play the songs and see what happens next, because we're amped up. We're excited to keep going, and we're definitely motivated and ready to carry the torch through the darkness, you know?
There you go. Very poetic. I like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
I didn't mean to write that down.
Write that down.
That's just what came to mind. I don't know.
The George through the darkness. Like, there's a line there. Yeah. You'll be screaming that on your Twitch stream sooner or later.
Now we gotta enter the stage in pitch black, me with some flaming thing.
Yeah.
Like like some Jameson bottle with a club.
I just imagine like a Hard Times headline that's like, metalcore vocalist says carry the torch. You know, it's like, of course you're in a metalcore band.
Yeah.
Stand your ground, carry your torch, you trope. Just kidding. I'm stoked that people just gave it a lot of people that I think maybe, like you kind of said earlier, Shane, that maybe knew about the band but just didn't really care about metalcore. I'm glad a lot of new people gave it a chance this time around, because it is a metalcore record, but I do feel that it kind of like scratches some different surfaces, because I know what I like and what I listen to, and I'm not really incorporating any new metalcore influences into the music. I'm kind of just incorporating sort of my own like back catalog of ideas, like what I've learned from metal from writing it, because you know, most of what I've been listening to is, I don't know, just trying to see like how can I put the national influence into a metalcore song without it being a non-metalcore song kind of thing.
So I'm
stoked that people kind of gave it a chance, and like maybe people who aren't super into the genre can find things that like stick out to them, you know?
Absolutely.
Just the songs that kind of rely on melody. It's like you don't really have to love technical metal to find something to like about Vanished Canvas or Memory Fiction. It's the melody is kind of the priority of the songs in those two particularly. So I'm just stoked about all the new people that are listening now.
Absolutely.
So that would be my message, is thanks.
All right. I love it. Well, thanks guys. I'm going to play a tune from the new record. I think, Memory Fiction is the one. I think I'm going to play that one. We've been talking about it so much.
Nice.
All right, let's do it.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Well, thank you.
Yeah, and thanks for letting me come on and do this with you guys as well. It was great talking to you guys.
Oh, you're welcome. We're excited to do this. We're looking forward to it.
Lessons that I find in love that we left behind.